Well, it's another edition of your Horsing Around podcast. Andrew Mason, Andy Lindahl here with you yet again, and we'll talk some Broncos, but our eyes are still both bleeding from whatever that was that we just watched on Thursday night, Andrew. And not, I guess what's funny about it is, shame on all of us for watching, shame on the Bengals fans for showing up, because guess what? There's absolutely no way anybody thought it was going to be a good game, and it lived up to expectations.
Yeah, I mean, I think they showed a stat that said the Bengals are now the first team since, I think, the 1939 Eagles to have their first two games at home and not score a touchdown for the home fans. I mean, we saw the hits that their offensive line took in free agency back in March, and it's clear that the replacements have not been adequate. You've got Andy Dalton kind of running for his life back there. They can't give him time. They can't get any consistency or flow on that side of football. And because of that, basically they were beaten by one play. I mean, one play, nice set of moves by Deshaun Watson, some breakdowns in tackling and containment. Once Watson took off and got upfield. But that's, when you don't have an offense that can move the football, that's the kind of precarious position you put yourself in, to where one madcap scramble like that can beat you. I mean, really, the Bengals, had no business losing that game at home, but because they can't move the football right now, they left themselves vulnerable to having one play like that beat them. And there they are. They're 0-2 with a pair of home losses and probably in a couple of games that they felt like they should have won. And now they've got to go to Green Bay next week after a 10-day layoff. It's looking very grim for the Bengals right now after a very tough game to watch for their fans and any neutral fans, really. It was inelegant, to say the least.
Well, we won't belabor the point. We could go into multiple points about whether to stop Thursday Night Football or at least don't start it till later in the year or whatever. But those are fruitless arguments at this point. It makes too much money. And you know what? I watched it. Not only did I watch it, I watched it on my phone while I took my son to a Skate City skating party. So I guess who's the real fool here, right? Let's talk about what was a good game. There's so many points that I want to get to from over the last week. We could almost do two podcasts in one, but let's start with the game last week in so many facets. I don't know about you, Andrew, but training camp is so different. It seems more of a series of 7-on-7 drills when we watch practice and so on and so forth. There's less hitting. Guys play fewer plays in the preseason. I don't ever feel like I really know how a team's going to do the last 4 or 5 years of my career covering the league until we actually see them play a full game. And I'm always a little bit anxious and nervous and whatever. You know, you and I now being on Orange and Blue 760 working for the team site, we're always going to shoot you straight. But I'm not afraid to admit it. I'm rooting for this team to do well. I don't like covering losing football teams any more than I like rooting for losing football teams, if I'm being honest. So I'm rooting for something good to happen on two fronts, because I've admitted in the past, everyone knows my history, I grew up in the fan base, but I felt almost more nervous and more unsure as to what to expect heading into this game, I feel like, than even any of the last few. And I thought, you know what, you survived and you got a home win, and with the way the schedule sets up, that is really good, because A, I didn't know what to expect, and B, the way the fourth quarter went, you could not have afforded to give that one away.
No, and I think as shaky as the fourth quarter was, I look at what happened there and I think, okay, that's correctable. I mean, you look at the interception, and it's a bad decision on the pick, but at the same time, probably a missed call there. But you can't rely on the officials to bail you out. You got to make sure you make a good decision there. But and then you had the fumble, and I know Tyler Palumbus on the show with you, Andy, has argued that it wasn't a fumble, like Jamal Charles's elbow was on the ground, and you can debate one way or the other whether it was a fumble or not. But again, these are things, whether it's a fumble or not, these are things that are correctable, and they're correctable, yet these mistakes didn't cost the Broncos the game. And I look at the big picture of 60 minutes, and I think the Broncos really played 45 minutes of pretty good to dominant football at times, and really most of the bad play can be encapsulated in about a 5 minute stretch of the fourth quarter. And even, you know, after that, after the Chargers narrowed the gap, the response immediately after it was 24-21 when Trevor Siemian hits Virgil Green heading from the seam to the numbers for the 44-yard reception. Yes, the Broncos didn't score on that drive, but that sort of response on that play was huge. And I thought, even though it didn't result in points on that drive, stopped the momentum of the Chargers right then and there. They were never able to truly get things back in their favor from them from that point forward. Did get into field goal range at the end, but there was a penalty aiding that. I look at a lot of the Broncos' mistakes in that game as things that are correctable, and I look at what a lot of the things the Broncos did right as far as getting the ground game going. Plenty of holes for Jamaal Charles and C.J. Anderson, a solid 4 yards a carry average against a team with a very good defensive front. Benny Fowler making plays, the tight ends making plays downfield. These are going to set up one-on-one opportunities for Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas downfield. And then on the defensive side, the play of Adam Gatsis and Shelby Harris up front, showing depth and showing depth on the defensive line, and showing the ability, those two guys showing the ability to be stout at the line of scrimmage and get in the backfield, make plays at the line of scrimmage and into the backfields and really take the run out of the game. I look at this. I look at a lot of at things. I look at things in general and think, boy, there were some areas that you weren't sure about and you thought might be weaknesses that were strong in week one. And I mean, there'll be some moves and counter moves from all teams after the first game. But boy, I find myself feeling a lot better about where the Broncos stand after this game than before, just because I feel like there were a lot of areas that where there were some question marks that came up big in that first game.
Well, then let's continue with the positive theme. You and I have been supporters of Trevor, and not to say we aren't supporters of Paxton Lynch. I'm still going to stick by it. I don't care how it goes. I just want a good quarterback because, as I already stated previously, I want a good team. Boy, I'll tell you what, in the third quarter, Trevor was dealing. Really, the second and third quarters, Trevor was dealing. There was a confidence we didn't see a year ago. To me, that's born out of the fact that I think he knows one mistake's not going to get a yank from the game. I think when he was a new starter and the coaching staff was unfamiliar with him last year, I love Gary Kubiak and what those men did. But I also think it was made pretty clear to Trevor, you better not screw this stuff up. Don't screw it up. Don't put the defense in a bad position. And he played that way. All the check down Charlie talk that people want to throw at him, to me, well, it came from the fact that the guy knew if he threw in any picks, he was getting yanked out of there. So I think what we saw the other night is he almost throws a pick six, then he leads the team on a long drive, fearlessly throwing it into the end zone into Benny Fowler on a couple, and fearlessly describes, I think, a lot of his throws. He had the Aaron Rodgers knack of getting you off sides, and frankly, his boss, the general manager, John Elway, was pretty good at that back in his day as well. If you jumped, he was taking the free play, and he was going to try to find one guy to run deep so he could take a deep shot. This was a different Trevor, and if this Bronco fan base can't get excited about Trevor and the offense as a whole that we saw, especially in that third quarter, I just don't. Maybe you need to find another team. I mean, because that was as efficient and as rhythmic as we've seen this thing since maybe 2013.
Well, yeah, and in the passing game in general, I mean, you know, you look at the total yardage and you kind of think, meh, but then you look at it on a per play basis and you see the Broncos are in the top 10 in yardage coming out of week one in yardage per pass play, and you see that, you know, 50% of the time that Trevor Siemian got rid of the football, it moved the sticks, which was right there with the Raiders for the top ratio in the league in week one. And though, I mean, the efficiency of the passing game in week one was exactly where you want to see it. And so if you have those games where you do end up having to throw the ball 40 times and you can maintain that sort of efficiency, you're talking about an attack that can put up some pretty gaudy numbers. And remember, in this game, you were doing it without a lot of explosive plays from Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, because a lot of the Chargers' coverage was shaded over those two guys. And Emmanuel Sanders was talking about on Thursday how much they were double-teaming him. So that was leaving opportunities for the tight ends and single coverage off with linebackers. And when Trevor Siemian saw a tight end with a linebacker, he's saying, okay, I'm going to try to drop that in there. And, you know, to the tight end's credit, Jeff Heirmann, he makes a move on, I think it was Kyle Emanuel, gets one step of separation. Siemian puts a perfect ball in there, and Heirmann makes a nice catch. And then Virgil Green makes a move on a linebacker, and he gets a 44-yard play. And A.J. Derby's making a catch on a linebacker. And so a good job by Trevor Siemian identifying where the mismatches were. I think there was one play on a third down. He found Benny Fowler against Melvin Ingram. And, you know, you have to ask maybe Gus Bradley why you've got Melvin Ingram covering Benny Fowler instead of being involved in the pass rush. I mean, that's a question for the Chargers media to kind of tackle, I would say. But at the same time, good job by Trevor Siemian to identify the mismatches and get the ball in there. And B, what this sets up going forward is huge, because if Siemian is finding those guys and those receiver and those other targets are making plays, your Dallas, your Buffalo, your Oakland, anyone else is going to face this offense the next several weeks, and all of a sudden you've got to play the Broncos honest when you see those four or five guys running routes. You can't simply make it all about covering Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. And at some point, you're going to see one-on-one man coverage for Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, and you're going to take those shots, and they're going to be there, and there's going to be some big plays there. And then you're going to have this offense really in pick-your-poison mode.
Well, it was enjoyable to watch. Still some things to clean up. You know, in the fourth quarter, you'd like to convert those third downs. I felt like on the last third down that the Broncos possessed the ball of the game, mm-hmm. it looked like Trevor went to hand off to somebody that wasn't even there. And then as he rolled out, it just looked like a busted play to me, which you expect from time to time when you have a new offense going in. I just hope we don't see it in what was a critical situation at the time happen again. But you know what? You get the win. Good for the Broncos. And now you move on to the Cowboys, which present their own unique challenge. And with a more full roster than we thought, before we totally get to the Cowboys, I've got to get your opinion about this. And I want to be careful how I phrase this, because I've already got some young people from our show ticked off at me for this, you know, the other day. But I thought it was funny. Mike Kliss kept calling in his tweets that it was a magical win and a magical win. And it was a great win with an electric atmosphere. I love the Bronco fan base. I have no complaints about how they came out and handled their business Monday night, because for a late game, you know, I know Anthony Lynn even told Ed McCaffrey on his Sirius show today that the crowd was so deafening they simply couldn't function. That was just the reality of it. So that hats off to Bronco fans for that. But to call that a magical win when Derek Wolf and Shelby Harris talked about they knew there was that right side exposure, the Chargers left, that they kind of went after, and to get the block field goal when it was just sort of the execution and their intent. I don't know that I put this up there with the magical wins that some of the Broncos teams have scored at home. And that's not a knock on the fans or anything, as some of the people took it for me. But to me, when you nearly blow a lead, it doesn't really go magical for me. It's when you mount something from behind that you don't expect. To me, it's Carl Mecklenburg calling a timeout as you block a kick and the refs let the play go on because the one ref blowing the whistle they couldn't hear in the crowd. And then you go right back out the next play and you do the exact same thing and win the game. We were just kind of having a lively debate about, was this magical or was it just, I mean, again, electric, I'm fine with that description because the crowd was awesome. But magical, I'm not ready to put this up there with the Ghosts of Mile High's accomplishments yet.
I think magical also is sometimes when, you know, when things happen that are kind of beyond your control. Like, magic can be sometimes a mistake by the other opponent, but by the foe. I think back to a 2006 game on Christmas Eve when the Broncos managed to escape by the skin of their teeth because of a wayward snap on a PAT by the Bengals, and they get out with a 1-point win. I would say, you know, that's nothing that the Broncos did.
Yeah, Marion Barber going out of bounds yeah. inexplicably.
Yes, exactly. These are things that you didn't cause, they just happened. And when I think that's, or like you mentioned the 1985 game that led to Louis Wright going coast to coast with the blocked Bob Thomas field goal attempt. Those are things I call magic. What I saw with the blocked field goal attempt by Shelby Harris, I saw good execution. You know, as Chris Harris Jr. pointed out, you know, when Shelby's had his hand on a lot of footballs, going back to OTAs, on defense, knocking down passes at the line of scrimmage. He's just had a knack for getting his hand on the ball. So I think it's a skill for Shelby Harris. I think he's a diamond in the rough player that the Broncos found are getting the most out of him, are getting the most out of. And, you know, credit to him and Derek Wolfe for finding a weak spot. It was right at Dan Feeney, the rookie out of Indiana, who I think is going to become a very good player. But in that moment, had a rough moment going up against Wolf and Harris, two guys who were kind of basically able to kind of overpower him at that spot. And Harris was able to get his hand on the football, ball game. I think you got to give credit to them. Just like you go back to last year in the Superdome, and you have to give credit to Justin Simmons and his athleticism for jumping over the line and being able to block the PAT and set up Will Parks to go the distance. You know. I don't call it magic. I think sometimes you just have to give credit to the player for making a good play, and also for finding a weak spot. For finding a weak spot in the protection.
Well, it was. I wanted to get your opinion since we started kind of having that fun debate on the air that day. But anyway, let's talk about this game coming up against the Cowboys. We talked to a legal expert based in Denver, Bill Berg, I believe was his name, and Bill pretty much let us know that he thinks, the way the legal process is going, he thinks we may see a ruling on the Ezekiel Elliott situation in the next couple days, but he still doesn't. I don't think any of us at this point would expect, even if court were to come out and say Ezekiel is suspended, I don't know that it would start this week. I think the Cowboys, it was much earlier in the week when the NFL decided they were going to suspend Elliott but not take him off the field for week one. So I think at this point they'd call it a competitive disadvantage because of what has gone on. So I think Zeke would play, and we don't even know if we're going to get a ruling that would go the way the NFL wants it to. So right now, I'm assuming Ezekiel Elliott's going to play unless something magical, and that, I don't know what you want to call that magical, but that would at least fall into it because it doesn't seem like it's going to go the NFL's way at this point. Anyway, he should be a factor in there for Dallas. And you talked about Shelby Harris. You talked about Adam Gotsis. Looks like Zach Kerr's going to be back, but, I noticed on the injury report for Thursday, Jared Krick, after getting some work in Wednesday, not out there on Thursday. What do you think is going to be the fate of Jared Krick for this game?
Well, I think Vance Joseph indicated they're still being cautious with Jared Krick, and if caution is the watchword, then it wouldn't surprise me if he's out for Sunday. And even if he does play, wouldn't surprise me at all if, as they work him back in, maybe they restrict him to pass rush situation, which, if you recall, when the Broncos signed him, that's kind of what they were looking at him for in the first place. He was going to be more of a pass rush guy, and Vance Walker was going to be the base package guy. Well, then Vance Walker tore his ACL in training camp, and Jared Krick had to be an every down guy, not just a pass rush guy. So there may be an opportunity because of the emergence of Shelby Harris and also the play of Adam Gotts, which has really come on and had an outstanding game Thursday. Joe Woods, the defense coordinator, was alluding to that at his press conference on Thursday. The play of Gotts and the play of Harris kind of gives you some flexibility and also allows you to kind of take your time with Jared Krick. Getting Zach Kerr helps you because that kind of eases things at nose tackle because he's not only a backup defensive end, he's a backup nose tackle. So if you can work him back in there, that means you can relieve Domantas Peko a little bit more often. They did get some snaps out of Tyreek Jarrett in week one, but I think they prefer to have Zach Kerr get some of those reps in there. And Kerr was starting to come on in the preseason, the second and third game before he got hurt. So getting him back out there will help. And the other thing with Kerr, because he can be a 330-pound guy that can play that three technique defensive end. When you need to go for kind of a jumbo package on the defensive line, he gives you the flexibility to get to go really big up front. So you could have a D line that's if you really want to go completely big up front, you could have a defensive line where you've got an Adam Gatsis who's, you know, right now hovering around 305, 308, and then you could have at nose Domantas Pecco, and then at defensive end, Zach Burrs around 335. You could go for a real big jumbo package up front, or if you want, or you could go for, you know, Domantas Pecco, Derek Wolfe, and then Kerr at the other defensive end. That's a pretty big defensive line with Wolfe at about 297 right now.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. I think we all know that when you're talking about the Cowboys, it's going to require that you stop the run first, and then you see what happens with Dak Prescott. I mean, to me, what would be your game plan against this Cowboys offense? There's a part of me that still believes they didn't play as tough a schedule as they could have last year. That 13-3 record was maybe inflated because of it. But I don't know, you know I should probably take them more seriously than I do, and they're definitely very good with the running game that they bring into town. But I just wonder, has Dak Prescott seen anything like he's about to have to solve with this Denver Bronco defense? Where would you fall as far as, I mean, do I need to give them more respect than I want to, or where are you on that line?
I think they definitely deserve respect. I mean, just the Packers playoff game, even though they lost it alone, means that they merit respect, and they did go to Green Bay early last year and win. But that said, that was when the Packers were still kind of finding themselves. I mean, remember, Green Bay started the season 4-6, and that was right, in the thick of that poor start by the Packers before they really found themselves late in the year. But Dallas is a legitimately good team, and a team that has legitimate Super Bowl aspirations in an NFC that is wide open. I was talking about this on Orange and Blue 760 on Thursday, that the NFC, you can talk about 6-7 teams that can legitimately say, hey, we've got a Super Bowl shot. I mean, you know, Seattle can say it. Atlanta can say it. Even though Carolina struggled last year, I think they're not too far removed from Super Bowl 50. So Carolina can say it. Carolina can say it. Green Bay can say it. I think Minnesota can say it. Dallas can. I think even Tampa Bay can say that if the pieces fall right, they've got a shot. Maybe I'm a little bit of a homer being from the Tampa area, but at the same time, they were a bad Roberto Aguayo game from being in the playoffs last year. So I don't think that. So they're not far off at all. But the point is that there's, you know, they're a legitimate contender, yes, but there's a whole mess of contenders over there that can make a claim to having a shot at being in the mix to be the NFC representative from Super Bowl 52. As for, you know, when you try to shut them down, you stop the run first. And I think that's the key. And I do think the Broncos are going to throw some things at Dak Prescott that he hasn't seen before. I think it's interesting to watch young quarterbacks as they develop, because almost all of them, you know, if even the ones that do well, they hit a snag at some point, because they'll have a rough game and that rough game will come when teams start throwing some looks and some coverages at them that they haven't seen, and they work. And then what happens is you see teams kind of mimicking that until the quarterback and the offense readjusts and gets its counter move right. I mean, I think a good example, just look at Carson Wentz's curve to this point. He got off to the blazing start early last year, and then you saw the adjustment, and he struggled mightily for several weeks, and the Eagles, you know, faded from the chase along with him. In the last couple of weeks of the regular season, he started to get his feet back under him, and then carried that over to, and had a very good performance in week one against Washington. So I think Carson Wentz has already kind of made that counter move and made those adjustments, whereas Dak Prescott, you know, as well as he's done, has he faced those challenges yet that are going to force him to make those counter moves? I'm not sure that he has, based on the types of defenses and the teams that he's faced to this point. So that's why this game is so fascinating, Andy, because I think he's going to see some looks and he's going to see some coverages that he hasn't seen before. And if he and the Cowboys struggle against them, then you know that every opponent that follows is going to, they will throw those same looks at him and the Cowboys until they adjust and until he figures it out. Now, that being said, I've seen enough from Dak Prescott at Mississippi State and then watching him closely when I was down at the Senior Bowl in January of 2016, and he's going to figure it out. I do think this is an elite quarterback in the making. I do think he's going to make any adjustments that are necessary as teams counter move and force the issue on him. But even if this was not the Broncos game, I would be so fascinated with this matchup, more fascinated with this matchup than any other in week two, just because it's Dak Prescott against the no-fly zone. He has not been tested like this to this point in his career. This is a game where we're going to learn an awful lot about this young quarterback.
All right, let's wrap it up on this. How important is this game to the Broncos? Because, you know, we know with this schedule and the amount of road games that lie in November and December, and you and I have covered that ad nauseum since the schedule came out, but when you really break it down, I thought about it this week. If you're going to get to the playoffs, you got to dominate at home as best you can, which to me means one loss, maybe two, and two puts you in peril of being a wild card, I think, in this division. So you've got the Cowboys. If you're going to win all your games, that means you can only have one loss to either the Cowboys or the Raiders or the Chiefs or the Patriots. And you can't afford a letdown against the Giants or the Jets. So how big is this game? Is this almost a must-win because it's a home game and you just got to find a way because of the other opponents that you still have to face on home turf?
Yeah, I think this is a must-win. And then I think even going to Buffalo is a must-win because you're going to have to win some of those road games, and especially against a team that is clearly rebuilding. I think both of these games coming up here in the next 2 weeks, you have to have. And the funny thing is, I was thinking about my initial prediction that 10-6 might win the AFC West, and then Kansas City goes to New England and wins in week one. I'm thinking, you know, I might have to alter that prediction a little bit. So all of a sudden, I think the margin for error has gotten a little bit slimmer because the Chiefs went in there and probably stole a game in Foxborough that hardly anyone expected them to get. So yeah, I look at this game and say, it's week two, but it's a home game against, and it's also against a common opponent, and that's going to be huge in the tiebreaker. It's right there. It's right there behind the division games as far as one that you have to have. I'd call it a must-win.
All right. At some point, we may have to discuss Alex Smith's bomb about basically telling everybody he thinks this is his last year in KC. It seems inexplicable, the timing, and I think you've got a quarterback there saying that he has some hurt feelings, Andrew, and I don't want to take a lot of time on it, but I'll tell you what, the timing of it after such a big win and such a great performance lets me know Alex Smith is in no mood to deal with the crap distraction that you brought in for him this year, and I just find the timing and everything interesting, so I just really wonder, as good as that Chiefs victory was, what this year beholds has in store for them, I should say, because I'll tell you what, that is not what you want coming off that victory.
No, and with the injury to Eric Berry as well, I mean, you've got the Alex Smith distraction. And yes, you want to talk about a distraction, those sorts of quotes, that's a distraction. And then you have Eric Berry, a heart and soul guy in your locker room, lost for a season. I mean, you have that great win. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I mean, that's a huge game to have, but you do get the sense that, things are a little bit uneasy right now in Kansas City. And be fascinating to see what happens this weekend. I mean, and where they go and what they do going forward, because, you know, all of a sudden on the back end, you know, it doesn't look so good on the secondary, and this is a team that might have to win some shootouts, and you know, who knows where things might be in terms of Alex Smith's frame of mind if this is truly how he feels.
Well, we'll see. It won't bother me at all if it causes them a headache. All right, Andrew, I'll tell you what. We'll look forward to doing it again. You can hear Andrew tomorrow. Well, tomorrow. You can hear him every weekday. We're recording on a Thursday night, folks, so just forgive me for that one. But you can hear him every weekday between 10 and 12 on 1st and 10 at 10 on Orange and Blue 760, your new all-Bronco, all-the-time station. For Andrew Mason, I'm Andy Lindahl. More horsing around to come.